Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You want to be down with the kids?
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Good Friday morning, everybody. Lance not here today or Monday. Lazy. Okay? He won't be here today or Monday. He's Lance Polillo now. Lance Polillo just decided I'm probably not going to work that much anymore. That's what he decided. And so he's out again today and on Monday after just taking – wasn't he just off? Didn't he just have like –
Yeah, the week of Thanksgiving. And he sat up here and watched NFL – or watched draft tape.
Yeah. And that's what – he came up here
– today and tomorrow or today and Monday?
He came up here and he watched Netflix – instead of working, just sat around and watched Netflix, and now he just decides, let me take a couple more days off, because I don't want to talk, I guess he doesn't want to talk Cowboys football. I don't know what his problem is, but he's anti-people. He's against the show having any success whatsoever. So, Roosh Williams is going to join us here in a minute. As soon as the doors unlock downstairs, Roosh can get up here. So he's going to be, we got so much good stuff to do today, and we will have a couple of guests. Greg Cosell, as usual, will join us at 7:30. Stevie D and Eric Sandler will be in studio at 9:15. Del Alolalala, or whatever his name is going to join us as well to tell us a little college football. We got a preview of the big college football weekend, which is huge, which is awesome. Which is right here, right now. See what I wore today? Aaron did this for you. You got your U of H stuff on? He's got an Astros sweatshirt, but he's got his U of H t-shirt on. I've got my Astros t-shirt on and my U of H. It's like a little windbreaker thing.
I think that means we've been working together for too long now.
Yep. Look at it. I mean, it's that's creepy. But anyway, so here we are on the eve of all these college football games. The first one at 11. With Big 12 going at it in Dallas, and then the Cougs in Cincinnati, and then the late game is going to be Georgia and Alabama. And we will talk about all of these games and more coming up here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 today. You got any thoughts about anything that you want to get in on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776 is the number. Not much... Locally, the Rockets didn't play, so they didn't win again. It's all they do lately. They just win games. So Christian Wood, the news on him is pretty good. His ankle sprain isn't considered serious. You're gonna need, dude. You hope that he comes back and that he is going to be a long term answer here. We don't know since he only signed a 3-year deal. When he signed out of Detroit and you give him $42 million, it's like what? What in the hell are they doing? Who is Christian Wood, and why would you pay him that much money? And it turns out to be one of the best signings that they've had in a long time. Nice job by Rafael Stone finding some talent and bringing him in here. Now the question, Roosh, is he a guy that is going to be here long term? Do you think he signs another contract here?
To be quite honest with you, I think his deal was signed with the intention of two things, right? First of all, they brought him in to see how he was going to pair with Harden. Obviously, that went down the drain almost immediately. So second, his deal is structured to where he's affordable and he's really attractive if teams want to trade for him. He's in the second year of his deal. In order to re-sign him, he's most likely going to be due for a max contract extension at the end of next year, right? After his deal is up next year. So You have two options. Either you extend him, which would then indicate that you're making Christian Wood a franchise cornerstone for this building block, for this rebuild moving forward, or you trade him while his value's all the way through the roof. And over the past few games, he was playing incredible, so he's showing teams that he is very valuable, especially on this deal. So I ultimately think that they're going to be looking to trade him. It's just a matter of what that return is.
I see a lot, you know, we've had this discussion before. Is the, and you can move that up and down and closer to you so you don't have to. I've seen that this before. We've had this conversation before. He looks at times to be a max dollar guy, and then at other times, no.
Yeah.
Is he in today's NBA, what's a max guy? It seems like everybody's a max dollar guy.
They're just throwing money these days.
It just seems like everybody is with the money that's being thrown around. Would you advocate him being a rocket max dollar guy going forward?
My heart says yes, sure. My brain says probably not. I mean, like you said, they kind of plucked him out of nowhere. He was a hidden gem. And so you're taking a real gamble if you're going to turn around and make that guy your franchise cornerstone. We also have to keep in mind, this team is probably not going to be, you know, remotely good for another 3 years at least, right? So Christian Wood, I think, is 25 or 26. You max him out. By the time his deal's up, by the time this team starts turning a corner, he's probably 29 or 30. Does that make sense? Most likely not. If you trade him, you can probably get some really valuable picks, which, you know, at this point, do you want to become the Thunder where you're just collecting picks for no reason? I also don't know. But Jalen Green is 19. Kevin Porter Jr., you know, still question marks to see what they're going to do with him, whether they extend him for how much. So they're still figuring out their identity. But I will say this. Christian Wood has started to play much better as soon as the Rockets went back to playing pick and roll, right? He was getting, as the screen man, Christian Wood was getting, in terms of pick and rolls per game, prior to, you know, they ditched the whole double big lineup and benched Daniel Tice. Prior to that, he was getting about 20 pick and rolls per game as the guy setting the pick and then screening and rolling. Against the Bulls, the Rockets upped that number. 39 against the Hornets, 45 against the Thunder the first time, 36, obviously he got hurt in the most recent game. So once they started going pick and roll with Christian Wood, throwing him the lob for the alley-oop, and then using him as a screener to pick and pop and hit threes, we started seeing the Christian Wood that we remember from last season. You know?
No, it seems. Is that the main... I'm not as excited about this little win streak with Lance, and I've had this discussion. He's really excited. I said, well, yeah, but none of the core is there for this. Granted, Christian Wood and KPJ were there for most of these four straight wins. But, you know, Jalen Green has not been. And when Jalen Green is in there, they look like crap. So I want to see them doing this when the three of them are together, or at least the KPJ and Jalen Green. And we've seen so far, you can't really have Jalen Green and KPJ on the floor at the same time.
So I don't disagree with you. I will say Jalen Green... Look, things change for these Rockets once they bench Daniel Tice against the Bulls, right? So once they ditch the whole double big dinosaur lineup, things change. In that first quarter of that Bulls game, Jalen Green had 11 points on 4 of 5 from the field. He was able to get to spots, get open. He had a bucket in transition. He got to the rack and got fouled. So things opened up. I think in theory, what you do, eventually you probably move on from Eric Gordon, right? Because he's obviously not a part of the rebuild. So Eric Gordon, move on from him. Or you move him back to the bench and you bring Jalen Green in his spot. In theory, Jalen Green's more athletic, more dynamic with all this space. He should be able to start improving and kind of turn that corner. All Eric Gordon's going to do for you is catch and shoot, do a straight line drive, or dribble the ball off of his foot. But in theory, you should be able to get Jalen Green in that role to succeed. And then also to your point of, you know, the guys from the rebuild not really participating in this win streak, I'll push back a little bit. Alperen Şengün has been playing very well.
About 16 minutes a night, though.
So right.
I mean, what's the deal? Get him on the floor more.
Get him on the floor more. He fouls. He kind of gets out of shape quick and gets winded quickly. So I get it from that perspective, but I want to see more of him. He's exciting. I don't know if you saw that little fake behind the back pass. That, you know, I mean, that stuff's electric. I want to see more of it. KJ Martin has been contributing.
Yep.
You know, energy, hustle, bench roll.
Is he a guy that's going to be here going forward is the question.
You know, I think so. The Rockets have this kind of collection of weird, you know, talent that went under the radar. Jayshon Tate obviously was you know, played out of his mind the other night, undrafted. KJ Martin, I think the 52nd pick. You know, Jalen Green was obviously a lottery pick. Kevin Porter Jr., a lotto pick. Talent has some issues, so they picked him up for a fake second round pick. So the Rockets have a you know, Josh Christopher, who also actually was really nice in the beginning of the fourth quarter of that last Thunder game. Yep. So they're getting these spot contributions. Whether Christian Wood is a part of that rebuild, we don't know. But my gut is going to say that they're looking to trade him. Unless, you know, this win streak is for real, and this team somehow starts turning it around. You know,
We'll see. I mean, hey, why doubt them when they're playing so well right now? If it was, and it was simply a move as simple as getting Tice on the bench and not having those big guys and doing a lot more pick and roll. That's good stuff. Well, and Steven Silas, I don't know. You know, a lot of people have been talking about Steven Silas and making some moves like this really solidifies him as a coach that maybe you can see going forward. But up until then, a lot of people were talking about, is he the guy here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on one hand, I'm thinking, hey, how long is it going to take you to make that change, i.e. benching Daniel Tice? On the other hand, you have to think, it's kind of difficult because they signed this guy. He's a veteran, right, especially playing with a bunch of kids. So from his perspective, he's probably thinking, you know, why am I not playing? They just signed him. He was basically the only free agent acquisition, the only new guy that they didn't re-sign. So I'm assuming Steven Silas was taking the approach of, you know, let's try to make it work. Let's hope it works. And then eventually, obviously, with his job on the line, he made a change. So through the losing streak, when Houston lost 15 in a row, their offensive rating was last in the league. They were scoring 96 points per 100 possessions. Their defensive rating was 20th in the league. They were giving up 109 points per 100 possessions. So they were basically down 13.2 points per game, right? Which we were
that's
no stranger.
I think that's bad.
Right. Okay. We saw they were getting thumped 15
right,
in a row.
Right.
But since they benched Daniel Tice, so this is starting with the Bulls game, through the winning streak, their offensive rating has been 9th in the league through that span, 115 points per game per 100 possessions. That's almost 20, you know, almost an increase of 20 per 100. Defensive rating through that span, 15th in the league, giving up 108.9 points per 100 possessions, so almost identical. And obviously they're basically plus 6.5 points per game, and we're seeing it. Now, the caveat is two of those games have come against the Oklahoma City Thunder who lost by 72 points last night. If you saw that game, pretty embarrassing. But on the other hand, they beat two playoff teams in the Chicago Bulls, who are a very good team, and the Charlotte Hornets, who can, you know, score lights out. And the Rockets went toe-to-toe with them, put up 146 points. So we're going to see how they respond, how they play against Orlando without Kevin Porter Jr. most likely. Christian Wood may play. I don't know if the reports come out yet. We'll see. But I think he's okay, and I don't know if they're going to rest him for that game. But we'll see how they play against the Magic. We'll see how they play against the Pelicans. And then once we get a chance to get all these guys back with Daniel Tice presumably not playing again, that's when we're going to see, you know, is this team for real? Are they a team in the dumpster like the Thunder, or can they be a middling team?
Well, this is what we thought we would see from them.
Right.
Right? Well, Jalen Green has got to improve. Like you said, at least he showed some flashes before he got hurt that, you know, maybe opening it up for him is going to make a difference. But he is a bad shoot. He's bad. Now, he can improve that, obviously. But he's got a weird shot anyway. I don't know how he's going to exist in the NBA for years and years with this shot that's coming from his hip.
Yeah, he's got like this kind of inverted, his arm, his hands are kind of like inverted at an angle.
And it comes from down here like a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will say, oddly enough, his best three-point shots he's looked best from the three-point line when he's further behind the three-point line, if that makes sense. Yeah. If you go back and look, you know, that crazy game he had against the Lakers when he hit those two rainbow bombs over Anthony Davis, the first game the third game of the season where he scored 30 against the Celtics.
Yeah.
It all comes from a little bit behind the line, which is kind of odd to me, but I think it's fixable. He shot 36% from three in the G League from an NBA three-point line, so I'm not worried about it yet. Kevin Porter Jr.'s shot I am worried about. He is not a good shooter, and you know, he seems to have a poor rhythm for when he needs to take that shot. But I'm not quite worried about Jalen Green just yet. Still 19, still filling his body out and getting used to it. He weighs less than me, just to put that in perspective. Yeah. Maybe I'm fat. But his athleticism is also kind of the thing that is going to let him shine. And with Daniel Tice and Christian Wood on the floor, defenders were just sagging off and just crowding the paint, man, and he had nowhere to go, so he was forced to take these shots. And so that's why, and I was at the Bulls game, so I got to see it, you know, up close and personal. When you have that space, he's so fast with that first step. And he also started turning a corner in terms of confidence. You know, he looked unsure of himself in terms of getting to the rim, but recently, and again in that Bulls game, he was just getting to his spots, you know, just making that first step. He's so quick with that first step of explosion. He makes that first move, and then boom, he's going to the basket. And unfortunately, that's the play he got. That's the type of play he got hurt on.
Yeah, right.
But
All right, so Roosh Williams is in studio with us, taking Lance's place and actually breaking stuff down instead of breaking stuff. He's breaking stuff down instead of breaking stuff, which is what Lance.
He got up to the fourth floor without breaking
a foot or
rolling an ankle.
No, he didn't. He didn't get injured at all, not once on his way up the stairs.
Hey, don't jinx me. Don't jinx me. I have poor.
You don't have Lance's
an injury history.
Yeah, yeah. And this is true too. Playing OKC helps. It helps a lot after 152-79 last night.
Embarrassing.
That's what OKC lost. The three of the Rockets' five wins are to OKC, and they lost last night 152-79.
I'll say this.
That's not a good team.
I'll say this. Three of them have been against the Thunder, so that's a huge – that's almost an asterisk. However, Jalen Green out. Whether the Rockets play better or not without him, I guess we'll figure out. Kevin Porter Jr. missed a half. Christian Wood missed a half. So they found a way to come back, by the way. They were down.
Yeah.
Without those guys. So, I mean, that's a sign.
No, that is. No. Hey, we're not taking it away from them. Just three of their five wins are against Oklahoma City, who lost 152-79.
And speaking of that game, here's some funny numbers from that game. Points in the paint last night. Grizzlies, 82. Thunder, 24.
That's not a lot. Doesn't seem like.
Largest lead of the game, Thunder.
82, just their points in the paint beat them.
Literally, yes, by three. Yes, you're right. 82-79. Largest lead of the game, Thunder, goose egg. Grizzlies, 78. Jesus Christ, 78.
That seems like a lot. All right, when we come back, some weird, weird college football coaching news. That's what we're going to bring you next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now, though, I'm talking about mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. It's the best way to play, win, get paid. If you haven't seen the site, go to it, mybookie.ag. Put in promo code BET975 and your initial deposit or whatever deposit. If you're already on there, go there now and put in up to $1,000. They will match that. So you get to double whatever you're playing with. You get to double your deposit, whatever that is. And you could have been on before, never been on before, whatever the case may be. At mybookie.ag, promo code BET975, they are matching. And no other bookie does this. And oh, by the way, what an easy and wonderful website it is to navigate. It's so simple. It cannot be any easier. Even if you're afraid of, you don't know, I'm not sure, oh my goodness, it's scary. It's not scary at all. It's actually so easy to get this done. So all you got to do is go to mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. Put something down on the Cougs. Let's go. Put something down on them Cougs to win tomorrow. Mybookie.ag, bet, promo code BET975.
We'll take a short break. Stay tuned for more John and Lance on ESPN 97.5. You found the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. John and Roosh Williams hanging out in studio here. Roosh, what's your podcast?
So I do two podcasts. One is hosted by the Ball is Life Network. It's called The Noble and Roosh Show. You can get that anywhere that you get your podcast. We interview NBA players and NBA media. Most recently interviewed Lakers legend James Worthy and Miles Turner, Indiana Pacers center, former Texas Longhorn. And then I also have recently started this YouTube series, which is, it's only on YouTube. It's called Rockets with Roosh, where I just sit there and give you my thoughts and musings on the Rockets. So check both of those out. And I also do a weekly guest spot on the Locked On Rockets podcast every Thursday is when you can catch me on there as well.
All right, cool. So he's all about them Rockets. So his opinion counts. Watches all the... And you've been watching some. It's been tough to watch at times.
It's been some awful basketball, and I'm sticking through it though. We'll see.
Gotta give you credit for that. I can tell you, I haven't been able to sit through all of it. I just haven't.
I don't blame you.
So some coaching news. It looks like Gary Patterson's talking to Steve Sarkisian about maybe joining his staff. We'll see. Maybe in some capacity.
Is that a rumor?
It is. He's talked with. No, I don't think it's a rumor. That he has actually talked to UT is something that has happened about possibly. We'll see whether or not it happens. But certainly, Sark could use some Gary Patterson help.
Yes, absolutely. Are we talking in like an advisory role or a coordinator?
In probably an analyst,
okay,
a defensive analyst.
I would love
something
Gary Patterson
like
to come coach up a defense, especially this defense that we saw this year from the Longhorns.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. And Gary Patterson knows he's forgotten more defense than looks like anybody at Texas knows
for the last decade.
Yeah. So that is happening out there right now. Adrian Martinez has entered the transfer portal. Is Adrian Martinez has to be 30 years old? How long has he been at Nebraska's quarterback? Good Lord, man. He has got to be 30 years. How in the world does he have any eligibility left?
Where's he even?
And by the way, Adrian Martinez is out there. But watch, everybody. Manny Diaz, he's 22.
He turns 22 January 7th.
Yeah, he's old. But he's been their quarterback. Honestly, I mean, it went from I swear to God, I think he was recruited there in 97 for the championship team. So Manny Diaz is in trouble. We'll see what happens there. There's a lot of talk about Mario Cristobal at Miami. Colorado State has fired Steve Adazio, so he is done there. And then Brian Kelly has taken over at LSU. Now, Brian Kelly met this happened not last night, but the night before. At the Tigers were playing basketball, and there was a big crowd there for the basketball game. And at halftime, I think it was halftime. I don't think it was before the game. I think it was halftime. It looked like it was halftime. Maybe.
It looked like a pep rally, but I'm assuming it was halftime.
Yeah, I am too. And so he comes out there, and here is Brian Kelly. And you tell me if there's anything different about Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, Brian Kelly at LSU.
Thank you. Well, this is a great way to get started, and I haven't even won all my games yet.
Started. That's a great way to get started.
It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans.
You great
fans. And to be part of what is going to be an incredible ride here at Louisiana State University.
At Louisiana State University. Brian Kelly. Now, you play to your audience, right? Either one, whichever one. And you adjust it there. You play to your audience, right? But man, dude, already? Oh, man. And you got some. I can't wait to get the gumbo.
I'm here with my family.
Is he going to be able to keep that up for the life of that contract?
Come on, dude.
Those people in the swamp are just looking at him like, what are you doing?
Stop, Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly, you're a Yankee. You're from North Opelousas. You ain't one of us yet. Well, you better win some football games, Brian Kelly, before you come down here and try to talk like us.
You know what it sounds like? Sounds like rest in peace, Norm MacDonald, as Colonel Sanders.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Well, that's all he knows of the South is Colonel Sanders. That's it. That's all he knows.
What's more shameful, that or LSU literally taking the entire Notre Dame introductory video of Brian Kelly and just photoshopping a purple jacket on him instead of a blue jacket and changing out the scenery of around Notre Dame's campus for LSU?
Oh, man. So they just took Notre Dame's intro?
Yeah, they almost shot for shot. One of them, he's sitting there in a jacket just staring right at the camera. It was a blue jacket, I think, in the Notre Dame one. They just photoshopped purple over it. Same words, everything.
LSU, you lazy. Hey, and by the way, down here, we're lazy. Okay, so thank you. Thank you, Brian, for joining us here in the South. And then there was Virginia's Bronco Mendenhall. I've never seen anything like this, and you guys tell me if you've seen anything like this. He tweeted this out. And this came as this shocked the world because nobody saw this coming. Virginia's Bronco Mendenhall said he's been involved for the last 31 years of football. He said this, clearly this week was a sense of clarity. I needed to step back from college football and reassess my life as well as my wife as my partner and next chapter of our life. This was my decision.
What does that mean?
What? Wait a minute. I'm stepping away. For he said this now. I was requested to stay by our president and AD, but my decision, but it's my decision only. Holly, my wife, is a little shocked too. Well, I would imagine she'd be a little shocked because not only did you say that you're leaving Virginia, but I need to reassess my life as well as my wife as my partner.
Ooh.
What? This is a double hitter for Holly Mendenhall, who I guess they've been married for a while. I don't know how many kids they have or anything. But in a tweet that you're announcing to the world that you are leaving Virginia and possibly your wife, this is unprecedented. I don't remember a coach ever quitting their job and their wife in the same sentence.
That is killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, might as well get it all done.
Sounds like Bronco was, you know, maybe pulling some OJ moves. So let's see. This is a further quote, at least as far as I can tell. Bronco says, "I believe I have a father in heaven. I believe if I live and really try to connect, I can receive direction and promptings. Now it takes courage to act on those and faith. And most every decision that has been positive in my life has been when I've listened. And most of the time, kind of the natural part of me says, no, don't do that. But inside, I know that I'm supposed to do. I tried different things in a few number of days, different paths that I thought could address it another way. And it didn't feel right. And I wasn't at peace. And as I returned to my initial thought, it was very clear. I don't know what any of that means."
No, he's a man of faith, it seems like, and he is. I'm not sure that God would. I mean, I'm asking God to if whether or not it's good for me to leave my wife. I'm pretty sure that's not something he's doing on his own. I think
he could be.
I don't know
ahead.
That God's ever advocated, "Hey, time to leave your wife."
Strange advice from God Himself, but he might be trying to get ahead of something. Maybe he did something and he saw the writing on the wall and said, "Let me get out of here."
Maybe. You know? Yeah, maybe that is something. I need to leave. I need to leave for this hoe. Maybe I need to leave Virginia and my wife. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this all plays out. But that was, to me, one of the oddest resignations I've ever seen.
With no writing on the wall for you know.
Nobody knew.
Wow.
Nobody knew.
Wow.
That's weird. 727 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776. We got some Texans news on the other side if you're interested. That's not a tease that everyone. Oh, I can't wait. Let me stay through this. Let me hold off and see whether or not you know, this is something that I can't wait to get to this Texans news coming up next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right. I want to talk right now about GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's John Claywolf. GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com. You're looking for a great way to get out of that car. And John Claywolf does this every single day. He gives you more money than anybody else for your vehicle. This is not even arguable. I mean, it is so awesome what John Claywolf does. He is giving you more. He gave me more money. He will give you more money. He is spectacular, people, in that it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter how much you're asking for or you're getting from the other guys. He's going to give you more. And he says, if I can't beat CarMax, I'm going to send you $100. I'll send you $100 right now. Because I can't beat CarMax's offer. And you know what never happens that? He never, ever, ever sends. One time he said he has sent $100 to somebody because CarMax offered like $4,000 more than the car was worth. So he said, oh, well, okay, we'll do that. So if you're looking for a great way to sell that vehicle or at least be armed going to the dealership or CarMax with what your offer should be, go to GiveMeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Time to talk some NFL with NFL Film Zone Greg Cosell on the bench from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I told you we'd talk some Texans. We got Greg Cosell joining us here. I don't know that he wants to talk any Texans football, really. Does anybody really want to talk some Texans football? Greg Cosell joining us once again here on ESPN 97.5. Senior producer for NFL Films, NFL analyst, joining us every week. Greg, welcome to the show. How are you?
What's happening, John? How you doing?
Doing great. Did you get a chance to look at it and see any of the Texans last week?
Who did the Texans play last week?
The Jets. Remember that game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I actually watched I watched the Texans offense and the Jets defense in some detail. Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh, man. I feel bad for you on that one.
I was kind of focusing on the Jets defense, to be honest with you. Sorry.
Well, yeah. No, well, that was the only thing to focus on. Because
I actually think the Jets defense, believe it or not, after an historically bad stretch, is kind of has turned it around a bit, and they do not have bad players on that defense.
Yeah, well, was it that, or the Texans have a lot of bad players on their offense?
Well, you know, I try to. The results are the results. I mean, I'm more of a process guy, John, as you probably realize now. You know, so when I look at the Jets defense, you know, I see some interesting pieces. We know that the Texans defense is obviously not one of the higher level, the Texans offense is not one of the higher level offenses in the league. So I understand that. But when I'm watching the Jets, I'm seeing what they're doing schematically. I'm trying to look at individual players. So, I didn't focus a whole ton on the Texans offense. Sorry.
Is Salah doing a lot of the stuff that he did at San Francisco?
You know, I think to some degree, sure. You know, I actually think that Mosley and Quincy Williams is a fascinating player to me. I remember when he was in Jacksonville a few years ago, and he had a stretch where he looked very good, and I don't know what happened there. And now all of a sudden he's with the Jets, and he's getting an opportunity, and he's a pretty athletic kid because he was a safety, I believe, in college. And he and Mosley are actually two pretty athletic linebackers. So, and they've got some interesting pieces up front. It's the secondary that they need, you know, to work through, obviously losing Marcus May at safety. I think Bryce Hall is a very interesting corner player. He's their left corner. He came out of the University of Virginia, and I believe he tore his ACL his senior year. And he would have been probably a second or third round pick if he had not torn his ACL. So he is not a low-level prospect. He has a chance to be a pretty solid player.
What did you think about John Franklin Myers as well? He had a pretty big game against the Texans.
Yeah, he's a pretty good player, too. You know, they signed him, so they obviously believe in him. They have Franklin Myers. They've got Rankins. They've got Quinnen Williams. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a bad group. So it'll be interesting as they go forward. Obviously, they're counting on Zach Wilson to become a relatively big-time NFL starter, and we clearly don't know the answer to that yet. He has a lot to work through. He's still a very loose, undisciplined player, and he needs to really learn a lot more about the subtleties and nuances and details of the quarterback position at the NFL level, but he's got a lot of talent. And as you guys know, if you have higher level quarterback play, that's a deodorant that makes up for and can camouflage other weaknesses throughout your team.
Absolutely, Greg Cosell with us here this morning on ESPN 97.5, joining us like he always does. So which Bengals team are we to expect? The one that had a little bit of a lull, or the one that's dominant at times here? And oh, by the way, they get a Chargers team that can't stop the run this week, and Joe Mixon has been just outstanding. So is this the Bengals team that we should expect going forward, or the one that we saw just a few weeks ago?
Well, I think what's really interesting, John, about the Bengals is what they've sort of done the last couple of weeks, and we'll see whether that becomes kind of an identity or if it's just the way it played out. But they've really turned to the running game quite a bit. You know, Joe Mixon has always been a really good back. I've said this before, but I remember listening to Bill Belichick on his Wednesday press conference. He's very good on his Wednesday press conferences when he's asked about opposing teams' players as individuals. They'll obviously never talk about tactics, but he's very good if you ask him about an individual player. And the last time they played the Bengals, he said that Joe Mixon was a top three running back in the NFL. And Bill is usually very honest about those things when he has these when he gives these kinds of answers. And Mixon is playing at a really high level. Their run game is outside zone based. Their O-line has actually played well in the run game. Mixon's had 28 and 30 carries the last 2 weeks. Burrow has not thrown a lot of balls. But one thing about Burrow is he is a cocky guy. If he sees one-on-one on the outside, even if the corner is off, he will throw the ball down the field. And you saw that with the T. Higgins touchdown last week. We've seen that with Ja'Marr Chase at times this year. But their run game is really driving them right now. And you hit it right on the head. They're playing a Chargers defense that is last in the league in rush defense and has been for most of the season. So that's on merit.
We've got Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. As the Bengals defense good enough? I mean, I still – we're looking for – who's the best team in the AFC?
Well,
and it's possible they are.
Here's the issue that we all face with this is the league has become more week to week than ever before.
Yep.
So what happens is every week something happens and people make bold definitive statements, and then the next week that doesn't happen, and you don't know where to go with that. You know, it's a perfect example was 2 weeks ago after the Eagles beat whoever they beat 2 weeks ago, I can't remember, and everybody on TV and I saw on Twitter, you know, they found their quarterback. Jalen Hurts is the guy for the next 10 years. And then all of a sudden after this week, well, maybe he's not the guy for the next 10 years. And I'm not taking a side here. I'm just saying this is very typical. I'm kind of responding to your question that so much is week to week. See, the problem, here's the issue, John, is when teams have a flaw, and when I say a flaw, it doesn't mean that it's such a deficiency that they're awful, but if they have a flaw, this is a league where any given week that flaw can be exposed depending on the nature of the opponent. So is the Bengals defense a dominant defense that every week is going to go just shut people down like they did with Pittsburgh this week? Not likely. So could Justin Herbert this week throw for 350 against them in 4 touchdowns? He absolutely could. So then what are we going to say next week? They have a bad defense? You know, I think we have to be careful about these bold definitive takes. And for people who know me and you're getting to know me, I don't really do takes. I try to stick to what the film shows.
Right. Well, I got a bold definitive statement. Ben Roethlisberger is not going to throw for 600 yards this week.
No, I would say that's a pretty fair statement.
Okay, all right. There's a bold definitive. He's looking really, really bad. And you know what? He's older. He's a Hall of Famer. And you know what? He's at the end of the line. But what do you do if you're Mike Tomlin and Ben's playing like this?
Yeah, they're in a tough spot because they don't really have a quality player to put in his place, and I'm not suggesting they should or shouldn't bench him, but clearly their offense is based on what Ben can and can't do at this point in his career. Here's their offense. Their offense is either very quick game to get the ball out of his hands because he's really not what he was as far as staying in the pocket. He used to be able to sit in that pocket and be really effective. He's not that guy anymore. So it's either quick game, get it out, or it's take a shot where it's a timing vertical throw and like a fade, you know, that kind of throw. So the offense is somewhat predictable in their pass game, and the run game is, you know, I'm trying to figure out exactly what Najee Harris is, and this is not a negative statement at all. This is just based on watching tape. He's very much of a grinder. I don't know if he's got a lot of juice to him. You know, he's physical, he's competitive, but I feel like I need to see more to determine whether he is truly that kind of foundation back.
Greg, so the Tennessee Titans got off to a hot start, and last 2 weeks they lost to our very lowly Texans and got thumped by the Patriots. Is Ryan Tannehill the guy? What do you think about Ryan Tannehill?
Well, they're in a difficult spot because obviously this was an offense 100% based on Derrick Henry, and everything they did worked off Derrick Henry, and they've been totally unable to create any explosive plays in the pass game, and now they're playing with street free agents at wide receiver, so that also makes it difficult because the NFL in the passing game is a combination of scheme and player. So there's schemes that you put out there where receivers are open because the scheme beat the particular defense. Then it's also a league of matchups where, hey, you've got to throw to a receiver one-on-one, and your receivers have to win and make plays. So it's a combination of both. They don't have anybody on the perimeter now who can make plays because everybody's injured. So Tannehill's in a difficult spot. So ultimately what you're asking is Tannehill a function of a system, or can he be the guy? I think that would be an open question for a lot of people.
Yeah, that is something that, well, sometimes he puts the team on his back, and then other times you're like, oh, nope, he's just game manager, and he's got to have that running game. But who doesn't need that running game in the NFL?
Right, that's a great point. Yep. We're finding that out this year, John, by the way.
We are. All right, 742 ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5, the great Greg Cosell with us here on the show. We will be talking more NFL football with him on the other side. Right now, though, I am talking about the big fight that is coming up. If you're looking for a great, great time this Sunday, Davis versus Cruz, okay? It's a pay-per-view. The unbeaten five-time world champion and boxing's hottest attraction, Gervonta Tank Davis, defend his lightweight championship against hard-hitting Isaac Pitbull Cruz in a can't-miss pay-per-view event. Davis is a generational talent who's only getting better, squares off against the hard-hitting and hard-nosed Cruz. Two high-octane fighters, one explosive showdown, Sunday, December 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. here. So if you're looking for, if you're a fight fan, this is a fight that you're going to want to see. Great card as well. All kinds of great fights on this card. If you're looking for a great fight, if you're a fight fan, even if you're not, maybe this is something for you on Sunday night. Get it. It's a pay-per-view Sunday, this Sunday, December 5th, 7 o'clock, Davis versus Cruz. Get there.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We've got Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us here talking NFL football. And Greg, last week, premier matchup, Rams and Packers. It was a pretty good football game, but that's third straight loss for a Rams team that was 7-1, now 7-4. What's up with them lately?
Well, I'm actually, you know, going to give credit to my matchup buddy Matt Bowen on this. We were talking about this earlier this week, and he made a point that I thought was interesting and fascinating, and I think true. I think the loss of Robert Woods is critical for this reason. Woods was a player you could line up all over your formation. He was an inside receiver. He was physical, competitive, really strong run after catch. He gave them a lot of formation versatility. Odell Beckham is essentially an outside finesse receiver. And I think that they do not have the same kind of formation versatility they had with Woods. I think the routes that Beckham can run are not as multiple and diverse as Woods. So I think they now have to try to figure out on the fly, as the season progresses and they're playing big games, exactly how Beckham fits in. It's the kind of thing you really like to do in an off season, but they have to do it during the season. And I think it's creating a little bit of an issue for them. You know, I think that this whole thing about what's wrong with Matthew Stafford, that part to me is overblown. I think it's much deeper than that.
Greg, I wanted to ask about Buffalo. Coming into the season, I had really high hopes for Buffalo. They started off hot, 4-1. And then they've kind of had some disappointing losses to the Jaguars, bad loss to the Colts as well. What are your thoughts on Buffalo moving forward and, you know, their standing as a potential contender? Because I don't think anyone really expected the Patriots to be leading that division.
Well, it's funny you say that. That fits into the conversation we had before the break. Buffalo's got a few issues that can crop up any week. Number one, they don't run the ball particularly well, nor with much volume. And number two, their O-line is not a very good pass-protecting O-line. So Buffalo basically started the season with the idea that Josh Allen has to be great every single snap, every single quarter, every single game, or we can't really play offense. And that's way too much of a burden for any quarterback. So now they found out that, you know what, we have to try to run it. And they're trying to do that. We'll see if they have success. They certainly need more production out of the run game. They're not going to become a run-first team. We know that. But they need to have some kind of run game. They need, you know, people never think when they talk about throwing the ball so much, and, hey, it's a passing league, and everybody throws that out very flippantly. But nobody thinks about the offensive line's role in that. It's very, very difficult to pass protect 45 times a game because the quality of athlete on defense rushing the quarterback is pretty damn good in the NFL these days. And it's just hard to pass protect that much.
Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5. Speaking of those Colts, not given Frank Reich has taken it, is catching it because of how long it took him to get the ball to Jonathan Taylor, and he finally did in that fourth quarter, and look what happened. Did you agree with that? We had Rick Venturi on, and he said, man, I don't know if you saw, but they were pretty successful offensively when they were throwing the ball around.
Well, that was a conscious decision. That wasn't the kind of thing where they forgot to give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. They were playing against a Bucs defense that's the best in the league stopping the run and doesn't stop the pass. And you can't look at the fourth quarter after the game's played out for 3.5 quarters and say, well, that would have happened from play one. That's an absolutely meaningless argument. So that was totally planned. They moved the ball, by the way. They scored 24 points in the first half. So I don't know what the issue is for people, other than some abstract sense that they should have given the ball to Jonathan Taylor. They scored 24 points. Wentz was very good. They attacked a weakness of an opponent as opposed to attacking a strength of an opponent. So that was all planned, and it worked exactly the way it was designed.
No, absolutely. I mean, that was a fun football game, too. That was a really good football game.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
Not so much the Patriots and the Titans. And Roosh, you talked about it just a minute with the Titan from the Titans side, but the Patriots side of things. I mean, man, Matt, you know, we look at Mac Jones as a game manager, but dude threw for 310 yards, and he just that ain't game managing. That's winning a football game for a team.
Well, it's funny you say that, because he was not very good in that game. That was not one of his better games of the season based on the tape. And I know that sounds crazy because of the numbers, but I will guarantee that Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels had a lot to go over with him in that game. He missed some things in that game. He wasn't quite as good after the snap in that game. You know, when you throw an 8-yard pass to Kendrick Bourne, and because of horrible tackling, he goes 45 yards for a touchdown, that's very helpful. But the one thing the Patriots do exceptionally well, is they really know how to attack an opponent, whether it's their scheme or whether it's a particular player. And by particular player, I don't necessarily mean a man-to-man thing, okay? They're just really, really good at that. Really good at that. And that really helps Mac Jones, because Mac Jones is so good at getting the ball out quick. You rarely ever see him get stuck in the pocket, as you see with some quarterbacks.
Patriots and Bills this week. If the Bills can't run the football here, they've got the Bills two of the next 3 weeks with the Colts in between. The Bills can't run the football here against this Patriots defense. You see the Patriots?
Well, we know what Coach Belichick's going to do. I mean, it'll be very situational, obviously, but I think you'll see him double Diggs and double Beasley situationally. He might even double Dawson Knox situationally. Dawson Knox has become a bigger part of this pass game. He got hurt, but he was becoming that. That's what it'll be. I think that Bill Belichick will feel that if they want to hand the ball off, have at it. I don't think he's going to build a game plan around stopping their run game. I think he's going to build it around trying to make Josh Allen have to think after the snap of the ball, have to play the game post-snap as opposed to pre-snap. Josh has gotten much better as he's developed being a pre-snap quarterback, but I think that Bill Belichick will really try to make him a post-snap player.
Do you have to, with a Josh Allen, as good as he is with his legs, do you have to play more zone? Because if you're turning and running with guys, that Josh Allen could just follow you up the field.
Well, they've also played a lot more zone since they lost Jonathan Jones, their slot corner. So this team has transitioned a bit into playing more zone coverage. We always think of the Patriots as playing a ton of man, which was true, but they've clearly played more zone over the last, I guess about a month now. So, yeah, I think you'll probably continue to see that. But I think you will see J.C. Jackson line up over Stephon Diggs. Even if it's zone coverage, I think you'll see him travel with him when Diggs is on the outside.
Greg, so the Chiefs started off slow, 3-4. Some people may be counting them out, but since then they've won 4 in a row. Started with, you know, squeaking by the Giants, and then they got solid wins over the Packers and the Cowboys. So they've won 4 in a row, 7-4. Do we think the Chiefs are finding their footing?
Yeah, I think offensively they're different now, because what had happened is Patrick Mahomes, we'd gotten used to Patrick Mahomes just being so incredibly special, making outside of structure plays, second reaction plays, improvisational plays, arguably the best in the league at doing that. But that's a hard way to live over time. And so what started to happen is those plays didn't happen anymore. And there was a lot of unnecessary movement. He would break down and the timing and structure of the pass game by himself. So I think over the last month, they've gotten him back to playing within structure. Get the ball out. Take what the defense gives you. So instead, you know, fantasy people don't like this. So instead of Tyreek Hill going 7 for 150, he goes 8 for 88. But they're getting back into a rhythmic offensive flow, and then the big plays will start to happen again. But they needed to get him away from all the unnecessary movement, because he has a tendency to move unnecessarily. Necessarily, we just become so used to him making great plays doing that, but it's hard to play that way all the time.
Can you explain the Broncos season?
Well, I think, again, they're a perfect example of a team that's not a great team. So it's, I mean, I don't know where you want me to go with that. I think offensively they need to run the football. I think that has to be their foundation. I guess Gordon is banged up. I don't know whether he goes this week, but they've got two good backs who in some ways are similar. They're sustaining, physical, competitive guys. Bridgewater, we know what he is. We don't need to spend a lot of time discussing him. We know what Teddy Bridgewater is. And defensively, they're pretty solid, because Vic Fangio, you talk to people in the league, they'll tell you he's a savant. They're very good on defense, and they're playing some interesting players. Right now they're playing Baron Browning, the rookie from Ohio State. He played every snap this week. They had to play Kareem Jackson without, so they played another rookie from Texas, Caden Stearns. He played every snap. So they're filling in with young players, rookies, who are playing well.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're a bit surprised. Granted, they won early on against really bad teams and started 3-0, and then they had a bit of a lull. But they beat a couple good football teams.
No question. Recently. I mean, they're one of those teams. They're not a great team, so they can win in any given week, and then when they lose, you know. So that's what I was saying earlier. Those are the kinds of teams that you know, you can't really try to make a definitive judgment about teams like that on a weekly basis. We know what they are. They have certain strengths and they have certain deficiencies. Yeah. And those deficiencies can crop up any time.
Yep. No, absolutely. And finally, Washington and the Raiders are going to go at it. It's actually a pretty good football game. Washington's played their way back into this thing. Taylor Heineke is fun, really fun to watch. And the Raiders are so up and down. I mean, they've had so much controversy and so much stuff swirling around them. But they looked really, really good last week against the Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders are an odd team because they've got some talent. I mean, I know that Waller is going to be out this week. But offensively, they've got talent. I've always struggled watching them, not struggled in the sense that I don't think they're good. I struggled as to why they can't be more consistent, you know, all the time. Because I think Carr's a very solid player. I think they have weapons. I've tried to figure out why Bryan Edwards is not a bigger factor in their pass game. I don't have an answer for that because I think he's a talented guy. And they predominantly use him as their boundary X. Normally boundary X receivers get thrown the ball. Maybe that'll happen now with Waller out. You know, and defensively, I think they have a solid front. I think they probably can be better on the back end. You know, they've had injuries. So we'll see. But, I mean, on any given week, that offense can be very, very good.
Yeah, no. And finally, Taysom Hill last night. I know he threw four picks, but, man, that guy's fun to watch.
Yeah, I went to bed at halftime, so I don't think I saw one pick. I didn't see the other three. You know, obviously they're going to have a big decision at quarterback, you know, as they go forward. My guess is they're going to draft a quarterback.
I don't know that he's the answer. They're paying him a lot of money, but I'm not sure. We'll see. But he is, you want to talk about, I mean, it's like watching Pee Wee football. He snap it to the quarterback, he's going to run right. Then snap it to the quarterback,
right.
He's going to run left. It's fun, though. I mean, he's jumping over guys. He's breaking tackles. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I imagine he was a lot of fun to watch until he threw three picks in the second half.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That wasn't that fun for Saints fans. That's Greg Cosell every week right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. As always, Greg, we appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There is Greg Cosell here every Friday on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It is time to talk about Coors Light. It's time to talk cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Light. It is the world's most refreshing beer. Love Coors Light. You will love it too. Give it a chance, people. Just give it a chance. That's all. You know, make sure that your bar where you go to is carrying Coors. Hey, how about carrying some Coors Light? What do you mean you don't have Coors? That's a dumb bar. Okay, it's a dumb bar if you don't have Coors Light, because that's just, I mean, well, you're losing a lot of sales. That's what I'm saying. Make sure that you are getting cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Light. Make it your beer, your official beer of whatever you're going to do. I know what I'm going to do today. I'm going over to Wildcat to see my boys, and I'm probably going to have a few Coors Lights. I'm just telling you right here and right now. And, oh, by the way, this weekend watching football, Coors Lights. And then, oh, by the way, a Sunday of NFL, Coors Lights. So it's the world's most refreshing beer. You can count on it. I'm going to be refreshed. Coors Light, baby. Climb on.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.